That's the legend. Later in his life, he said about himself, when he was an old, much older person, so he moved to, by the end of the lecture, he moved to Paris. He left Eastern Europe completely and went to Western Europe. And the last decade of his life, he lived in Paris. Again, as unlikely as that sounds. And in Paris, there were a collection of Russian and Lithuanian Jews, refugees, who had a synagogue called Yotze Rusya Poland. So for short, they called it Rup, which is Rusya U Poland, Rup. And their Jews called Rupin. You ever heard the guy that built the dam in Israel on the Jordan River? That means that they came from that group of refugees who came out of Russia and Poland. So he was like the unofficial rabbi. He never held an official rabbinic position in his life. So they honored him the last year of his life. They honored him that he should deliver the Shabbos Tshuva Drosha in their shul. The customary halachic and agadic sermon discourse given by the great rabbi, and the shul was packed. Everybody came to hear him. He got up on the bima, he got up on the pulpit to speak, and he forgot. He couldn't remember one word. Couldn't remember what he was going to talk about. And he put his head down on the lectern and wept. And he said, that's the best drasha. He said, zet was vert von a mensch. Look what happens to a human being. He said, when I was 14, he said, there wasn't a rov in Litta that could say a pilpul with me. He said, no, I don't know anything. And he went down from the bima. And the eyewitnesses say that the entire audience, which numbered in the thousands, it was so emotional, people wept. Because that was the greatest lesson in Musar. But in his early career, he was the shining star, so to speak, in a constellation of great men. When I discussed Valozhin with you, he's a contemporary of all of these people. And in the midst of all of these great men, he was head and shoulders above them in his knowledge and in his presentation and in his abilities. And he set for himself a goal. And the goal, as I mentioned before, was to reform Jews, not Judaism, but Jews. Now, the Jewish people suffered in the middle of the 1800s in Russia from certain chronic problems, which the Haskalah took advantage of. As I mentioned before, when we discussed the Haskalah, the Enlightenment, their complaints against the traditional Jewish establishment, the Orthodox Jewish establishment, their complaints were not completely without validity because of the fact that the Jewish establishment did allow the wealthy class to exploit the poor. It was not very circumspect in matters of money. It cut corners. It was guilty in the matter of the Kantonistin, as I mentioned to you, when Jewish children were turned over to the Tsar's army. It was guilty many times, literally, of murder. And these moral and social defects that were built into society, the Haskalah raised them as an attack against traditional Jewry, as an attack against the Torah, as though it's the Torah's fault. I always say that one should never confuse Jews with Judaism, nor rabbis with religion. You have to be very sophisticated to be a Jew. And if you see a very fine and good and upstanding Jew do something wrong, that's not God's fault. That's not Judaism's fault. It's not the Torah's fault. But on a mass scale, the Haskalah mounted their attack against traditional Jewry on the basis of these character faults, on the basis of the fact that, look at the Torah Jews. Look how they behave. Look what kind of people they are.